Welcome to the September 19th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session to discuss a matter of student discipline, a waiver of a student expulsion hearing, and a stipulated expulsion order and rehabilitation plan. The board then followed with an open session and voted 6-0 for the student discipline. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Yes. Approval of minutes for September 5th, 2006.
Go ahead.
Would somebody like to make a motion for that? Okay. Well, heck, I'm going to move that we approve the minutes of September 5th, 2006. Seconded by Mr. Peter.
Can I say one thing, though, before?
Well, sure, then we'll have discussion.
I just wanted to point out that when we had our item number 3 on page 4, district test results in language arts and mathematics and district accountability progress, there was sentiment
of what the federal government is expecting from us in many ways does not further the needs of our students. Other discussion on this item? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. We'll move on then to correspondence. We had no correspondence at this time. Let's move on to public comment. Do we have anybody from the public that would like to address us at this time? Seeing no one, we'll close public comment. Move on to reports. And we do have Yoni Moskowitz from Morro Bay High School with us this evening. Yoni, would you like to tell us what's going on at Morro Bay High School?
Do you guys want to make public comment?
First of all, Morro Bay is very sad to say goodbye to a familiar face, Mr. Pruitt. Mr. Pruitt is our vice principal, and he'll be leaving us to work in Texas later this school year. He started his fifth year as vice principal this year and will miss the district where he worked 8 out of his 9 years in education so far, and he also attended school. He appreciates everything working at the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, everything everyone working here has done for him, and we, the student body, will miss him wherever he goes. Wish him well wherever he goes. Our fall sports assembly is scheduled for this Thursday, and all of our sports seasons started off fantastic, and we can't wait to continue into league play later this month. Cross Country hosted the largest ever Morro Bay Invitational 2 weeks ago. Club Rush went fantastic, and the nominees for homecoming will be decided later this week. Yeah. The ID makeup is still scheduled for Monday the 25th, and we still have not heard about the National Blue Ribbon Honor Award, but we're excited and waiting for some feedback. Six of our outstanding students achieved commended status in the National Merit Program this year. None moved on to the semifinals or finalists, but we're still very proud of them. And six other outstanding student leaders will be leading local Hawthorne Elementary School students on a trip to Yosemite October 2nd through 7th. And Morro Bay High School is seriously looking into becoming involved in the student-funded program and that introduces students to the wonders and beauties of Yosemite National Park. That's it.
And Yoni, as always, I got it wrong the right way this time.
Walter's never pleased to be confused with me, but I'm always happy to be confused with him. I just have a couple of quick issues. The governor of the state of California has been signing some of the trailer bills and the clarification language bills attached to the educational programs, and we look forward to having an analysis of those in the near future. The The counseling bill is a particular interest. Mary's been holding some meetings with our school site counselors, and we'll continue to monitor that one and report back to you as soon as we have any information about what the state's going to deliver to us. Some of the things on the horizon for school districts, one of particular concern is the STERS shortfall. The state teacher retirement system is billions of dollars underfunded in its liabilities. In relation to their actuarial study. And the conversation is about raising rates. There's three significant contributors to the state teacher retirement system: the employer, the employee, and the state of California. Right now, the employer, us, pays 8.5% of an employee's wage, the employee pays 8%, and the state of California pays 2%. What the conversation is that the employer's share will go to 13.5%, the employee's share will go to 8.5%, maybe 9%, and the state share, no, actually will go to about 3%. So the conversation out of Sacramento, and it's going to be a big issue for the next legislative session, is to try and craft whose share is how much. And we can look forward to having some significant conversations about that. An increase, and by the way, it won't be in 1 year. The increase will be phased in over 3 years, they're talking about right now. But the increase is significant in terms of our payroll. If we have a $30 million teacher payroll and we have a 1% increase, that's going to be a $300,000 hit. So it's going to be a high-cost item no matter which way it turns out for the employer anyway. 1% or 5%, it's still going to be a lot of money. The other item on the state horizon is Proposition 88, which is the California Universal Parcel Tax. It's a $50 tax on every parcel in the state of California for the purpose of education. Education forces out there agree with Superintendent Connell, but that the public is predisposed to invest in public education, they think that there are better ways to do it than this proposition. The proposition is poorly worded and has a lot of holes in it. So it's not a bad thing that it's not going to be supported. Whether it passes or not remains to be seen, but it won't have much in the way of campaign funds in the future.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't there, besides some holes and some things like that, isn't there some language in there that school districts and school administrators have some concerns about?
Yeah, it ends up giving perhaps our Prop 98 money away for purposes that we wouldn't want to support. So it's one of those bills that doesn't have clear language in it. If it were to pass, it would be very confusing to a lot of people at the beginning.
Russell, is the money being debated about the STERS shortfall in addition to the special reserve fund for the post-employment benefits?
It's not related to that, okay? The post-employment related benefits is a separate fund established when the stock market was going great guns. And it has been underfunded, but it also hasn't been released in terms of benefits at this point. It was put together, but not a whole lot of people qualify for it, I think is the point right now.
But I guess the question is the additional funding the school district may face for any ultimate determination about contribution to STERS is in addition to the Fund 20?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. I've been receiving some lobbying pressure on Prop 89. The drill is that since we're an oil revenue district, What's the take on that?
It's another piece of legislation which has some characteristics to it. They tried to build in something for education so it would gain some support, but it isn't viewed, and I'm not real well versed on it except to know that the Ed Coalition forces are opposed to it as a poorly written piece of legislation, and it really is about tax benefits for oil companies and whether or not,
and probably CSEA as well. And so those are the major school organizations in California. Any other questions, comments? Okay, we'll move on to item number 3. A determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Mr. Barnett.
Good evening, Damian Barnett, Instructional Services. I'm just here to bring an annual item. Both Ed Code and the Williams settlement require that the district provide a determination of sufficient textbooks. Sufficient textbooks or instructional materials are defined as textbooks or basic instructional materials adopted subsequent to the adoption of content standards for each pupil in reading, language arts, mathematics, history, social science, and science. The district currently meets the sufficiency requirements for K-12 mathematics, K-12 reading, language arts, ELD, 712 history, social science, and 412 science. The district does not meet the sufficiency requirement in the following areas: K-6, history, social science, and K-3, science. And as those adoptions come forward in the state's curriculum framework development and adoption cycle, our district will complete the curriculum revision process as well address the need for current adopted textbooks in those subject areas. And attached, you'll see the plan in order to get those, to bring those two things, make them sufficient.
Thank you. Because Mrs. Botman is not here, I'm going to ask the question that she would ask if she were here, and that is, even for those texts where, because of the approval, state approval and our approval cycle, you're not saying that we don't have textbooks and approved curriculum material for students in those subject areas?
That's absolutely right. Okay. Students do have materials. They're just out of the adoption cycle. Okay. So history, social science just came on last year, so we're in the process of evaluating those materials and getting new materials to supplant what we already have.
This is just for my own curiosity, really, but in the area of special education, do we have, you know, what do we use for those materials, and do those students have, do we have enough books that those students can take books home, or is it just class sets? And you probably don't use the standard framework textbooks, but we have like alternative, or I just want to, what do we do in those areas for like special day class, for instance?
I think Dr. Matakovich has the history on that.
Yeah, what's very important in our special ed classroom.
To address this, I close this public hearing. Move on to item number 4, GAN limit calculations for 2005-2006 and estimated calculations for 2006-2007. Resolution number 030607. Mr. Miller.
Thank you. The GAN limit is an outgrowth of Proposition 13, and it has with it characteristics of measuring what our expenditures are, reporting them to the state so that they can fold this calculation into their limitations under Prop 13 and thus be allowed to spend more or less than what they thought they could based upon the GAN limit calculation. The GAN limit calculation is probably one of the most useless pieces of work that I do in my capacity as your assistant superintendent, but it is required to come forward.
Is that a political comment?
Well, that's not editorial. That's the truth. The result of the calculation might show that we're over our GAN limit, but the law allows us then to appropriate some of the state's money so that we can meet a new standard of the GAN limit. It is a fluctuating amount. The resolution which the district is asking you to pass here tonight is the same one that you've passed every year since 1979, and it is resolved that the district can meet its GAN limit calculations.
Any discussion from board members? Comments from the public? Okay, I would take a Well, let's hear if anybody's interested in this resolution.
I'll move adoption of resolution number 03-0607.
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Spadafor for resolution 030607. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Spadafor?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Aye.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Peter?
Yes.
Passes 6-0. Let's move on to item number 5, proposed revisions to board policy 4127/4227 and 4327, temporary athletic team coaches. Mr. Robinette.
Yes, thank you. This is the first of two proposed changes to board policy, or the second one is actually a suggested adoption for board policy. As you've already been apprised, we have a new requirement by C. And this is a first reading. I'm available for questions or any changes you might want to have, or if you wish, you can accept the policy as it's written.
If there's no discussion, I was going to move to accept the recommendation of Mr. Robinette that we adopt board policy as numbered on page 5.1.
Seconded for this move by Mr. Spadafor and seconded by Mr. Peter. And I just wanted to say that, and I'll talk about this also in item number 6. Both Mr. Millar and I have had the privilege of hearing representatives from CIF at the California School Board Association, and this is, I think, a great thing that we're doing and that the state of California is requiring. Training for all coaches. There are a lot of issues that I think people don't consider, and we're really talking about the safety and well-being of children, and so I applaud this, and I'm glad we're bringing this forward. And although it has a date of implementation, December 31st, 2008, I look forward to our district moving forward on that much more quickly. We can go ahead and go forward on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. I don't know. Do we have any public comment? I apologize. Seeing none. Okay. Move on to item number 6, proposed new board policy 5131.63 regarding steroids. Mr. Robinette.
Part of that coach's training includes a whole section on the use of steroids and the prohibition of steroids. Ed Code, as of this March, now requires that all school districts that have CIF-sanctioned sports have a prohibition to steroid use, and androgenic and anabolic steroids and the substance sinephrine. We have had that in our athletic contract for some time, and it's been part of our working policy, I guess, for some time, but this is language from CSBA that would support the new Ed Code provision that we do, in fact, prohibit steroid use or illegal steroid use, and this is suggested language for you to look at for that.
Any discussion from board members? Mr. Millar and then Mr. Moskowitz.
I guess my problem with this is on the 6.2, and it's this 30 days restriction from participating. Just a wink and a nod, and, you know, we're cheering somebody for athletic achievement on one hand and the suspicions on the other hand. I don't want us to set up I don't want us to have a policy that encourages games playing to evade the policy, and I think by having a really severe sanction right up front, well within the comprehension of our students who participate in athletics, that we're going to send a stronger message.
I don't know how they would catch someone using steroids. Is there tests administered? Because I've never heard of them. Is it just suspicion? And who would pay for the tests?
Yeah, it would probably.
Suspected?
My suspicion is it would be the same as any controlled substance. It would be, you know, the same as catching a student athlete using other drugs, using alcohol, being under the influence, using in a locker room. But it's probably very difficult to detect. Our school district does not do any type of drug testing currently.
Thank you.
Isn't part of the CIF-approved curriculum at least some level of recognition of potential usage by students?
Oh, it's a huge part of the curriculum. Yeah, it's a big part of the curriculum. And it actually goes beyond steroids to even the use of protein supplements and things like that that are actually could be very damaging to the liver and kidney also. So it's a big part of the curriculum. You raised the point of the CSBA recommendation. The 30 days was not part of the CSBA recommendation. It was part of what we currently have in our athletic contracts. We treat it the same as all of the controlled substances, that it's a minimum 30-day suspension. But it's certainly something that the board could take whatever action you wanted to in that.
I was actually going to ask the same question that Mr. Moskowitz asked about what the policy was around testing, but I want to echo what Walt said. I think, a 30-day suspension sends the wrong message. I would be in favor of a much stronger statement in that regard, a zero-tolerance policy of some sort followed by a ban from the sport, either during your entire high school career or, maybe a year or 2 years or something like that. I think it needs to be a much stronger message.
The language actually reads, a student who's found to have violated the agreement or this policy shall be restricted from participating in athletics for a minimum of 30 days and shall be subject to disciplinary procedures including, but not limited to, suspension.
No, I think that Ms. Dickinson's point is well taken. There is some flexibility here. And I also think it's important to note that the school has no ability to test. So the evidentiary matters involved with a student being turned over by a co-student or a parent or a coach is going to open up a Pandora's box. Is where do you go from that point to prove that somebody is or is not using substances that are banned? So I just think when you do get to a point where you're denying somebody a right or a benefit from their participation, it has to be based upon a process that they know what they're facing and why and what they're going to go through. This doesn't do that.
It strikes me that typically what we want to see is board policy, which is then followed by administrative regulations. Some of the things that have been brought up here tonight are bordering on recommendations for administrative regulations, which I'm personally not uncomfortable with. But there are some issues. Yoni brought up a concern about how do we actually know whether we in fact are going to be testing students, and we have discussed in the past whether we want to do drug testing. Now that was random drug testing for athletes, I believe, and we landed on no at that point. I think that from my perspective, how do we do it in looking at what you're talking about, the evidence, and then what do we do about that afterwards, is a 30-day minimum with the flexibility to do more enough? Does it send a strong enough message? I don't know. And maybe what we need to do, Mr. Robinette, is bring back some ideas for alternative language that would address the concerns of the board. First of all, how do we implement the policy? And then secondly, what are some possible alternatives to the 30 days, and is that enough? And the board can discuss that. Mr. Millaris has some comments.
I appreciate Adrian's comments and yours too, John. This due process aspect of this is an important issue, and we reach that threshold just with a 30-day ban from the sport, I think, anyway. So, and the way I sort of envision this happening is where the coach, athletic director, somebody has some reasonable suspicion, and as far as the communication of the message, the 30 days up front and then the additional flexibility bothered me, because when you phrase things that way, the 30 days takes on a life of its own. I'd rather see banned from the sport with the option for the board to take lesser action if it chooses, based on the mitigating circumstances or whatever. So I do agree, we don't want to end up becoming the drug testing police force, but by the same token, we make a lot of statements to our students about drugs, even though they know that we cannot enforce what we say we want, and part of our responsibilities and part of this battle is to enunciate what our maximum minimum expectations are for kids and then just do the best we can to not only model it but to enforce it.
So far what I've noticed is that we've only been talking about individual punishments for abuse, but sports are a team sport usually, and so I was just wondering if anybody had any opinions on punishing the team, or because peer pressure in high school is very important, and if we pressure each other into not doing drugs because it might hurt the future of our sport or the future of our team, it's just something to think about.
I'm not sure that we could regulate the conduct of a team based on the individuals who participate in it. And I would see that might fall more under the rubric of the coach's training and how does a coach handle that and how does a coach help prevent that. It's an interesting point. I see Dr. Valentine has his mic down.
I guess I was going to echo Mr. Millar and then point out that there are two approaches. One is to declare the minimum and with the option to go deeper, and the other is to declare the maximum with the option to go lighter. Board, if there's any direction you'd like us to go on that, we certainly can respond.
So, is the consensus of the board that we would go heavier with the option of lighter? Is that something that you'd like to explore? Would you like to be able to look at the language side by side?
I'm not sure. I'm
okay, so we'll bring this back.
Eligible player on the team, and you win a bunch of games, you end up forfeiting the game. So there are ways to do it, and those I'd love to hear those kind of ideas. Also, I think it's an opportunity, as you pointed out, Chris, for the coaching staff to figure out a way to turn that peer pressure into a positive thing about for the team.
Okay. Do you have some direction there, Mr. Robinette?
I think so, but so that I'm very clear, are you asking to bring back some suggested language to the board policy or keep the policy flexible and bring back some language and administrative regulations that
I think what the board is asking for is some alternative language to the minimum restriction from playing, one looking at the current language and the other looking at a stronger statement with the idea that it could be less. And then also, I think what the board is also asking for are some ideas about how this policy might be implemented, not necessarily the specific language of the administrative regulations, but what specifically we're going to do to enforce a policy that is intended to have enforcement.
Great. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Anybody else on this one? Okay, great. Let's move on to item number 7, approval of unaudited year-end actual financial statement for 2005-2006. And Mr. Miller.
Thank you. This item is, as it was discussed 2 weeks ago with the board, just quickly running through some of the highlights of our unaudited actuals. The total revenue for the district was $62,300,000. The total expenditures were $60,266,000. There were transfers in and out for about $1.7 million, and it left us with an increase in our ending fund balance of almost $500,000. The ending fund balance was $9,321,000, of which we utilized 30% of that to fund our 5% economic uncertainty. 15% is allocated for restricted programs carryover balances that we are mandated by law to do. And then we have our lottery and other one-time reserves that we've set up. The district had $2 million of unallocated reserves at the end of the 05-06.
But the state requirement is
3%.
And we're above that.
And we're above that. Because of our basic aid status, We're volatile in terms of our reliance upon local revenues, and so the board determined that it's at the end of the fiscal crisis a number of years ago to put 5% in reserve as opposed to 3%, just to have that extra cushion.
Thank you. Yeah, Russell, I just had one question about Fund 25, the Capital Facilities Fund. And it talks about expenditures totaled $73,168 for administrative fees, demographic software, and consultant fees. Can you tell us what the demographic software was that we spent money on? I'm just curious what it is and how we use it.
That is a piece of software that we use in order to track where our kids live and what it looks like in terms of boundaries. Is that the demographic software? Yeah. Brad is the one who uses that in order to assist in the planning of facilities into the future.
My mic is down, but I can't read it. This is Roger. I'd like to move approval of unaudited year-end actual financial statement for 2005-2006.
It's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Anybody from the public who'd like to speak to this item? Seeing none, we'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Moving on to item number 8, a discussion of the Johnson Avenue property. Mr. Parker and Mr. Buckman would like to speak on this when you're done.
I thought I'd start with just a little bit of background. Our school district has gone through multiple economic cycles of adequate funding and severe budget shortfalls. During our most recent budget crisis, the board directed staff to not only find places to cut the budget, but to also seek new revenue sources that would provide ongoing revenue streams. Since that charge, staff has been actively pursuing such things as mandated cost reimbursement, MA funding, utility conservation, water solutions in Morro Bay, grants, leases, and deficiencies in all of the other daily business matters of the district. In addition, staff has undertaken the identification and conversion of underutilized real properties with the goal of providing ongoing lease revenues or capital funds which could generate ongoing interest income. The first of these projects was the old Avila school site. Currently, we're engaged in the conversion of the Johnson Avenue property. As sometimes happens, seemingly this is only one possible use of the fund. We do believe that the Johnson Avenue property, as is, provides little benefit to the district, that if entitled, the value of the asset would be greatly increased, that a capital fund and revenue stream could be created to benefit our students, and that a capital fund thus created might be put to use in a unique new way. We will look forward to the board's discussion and answering any questions you might have.
Mr. Buckman, would you like to speak now or would you like to wait till after the board is? Okay, sure. Mr. Buckman?
My name is Mark Buckman. I live in San Luis Obispo. In going through the board packet for this meeting, I was very intrigued with this item and with the previous discussion that the board has had. And as I was going through it, a thought occurred to me. First of all, I really urge the board that if money is generated from the sale of this property or any use to this property, to please put it to the use to bring the best and brightest employees in here for our children. But I also want to take advantage of this time to urge the board to direct staff, if possible, and if it isn't being done already, to look to form some kind of coalition or group with other government agencies in the community that are also facing this similar need. I'm looking at an item that says we could generate maybe housing for 38. Maybe we can generate $160,000 a year. But taken with other government agencies and putting those resources together, we could really form some kind of benefit to this entire community, not just for school employees, but for city employees, for county employees across the board. So this is kind of a big concept, and I apologize. But the county owns Sunny Acres right now behind the old General Hospital. The San Luis County Office of Education owns 300 acres. Camp San Luis has acres and acres of land that it would love to lease. So I urge you also to look at a slightly bigger picture as you discuss this tonight. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you. Let's start with Mr. Peter and then Mr. Millar.
Boy, I've given this one a lot of thought, and I know it's a big issue for the community and for us, and I spent quite a bit of time on it. It's sort of the first big issue that I think I've really had to wrestle with as a board member now. And the location of the property is, it's not contiguous with San Luis High School. It sits off behind, it's a very steep slope, it sits on the other side of the parking lot. And I came to the conclusion that you know, from an expansion perspective on the campus, that there are probably much better locations, and we do have locations on the campus that we could expand into. That being said, I don't think it hurts to have a little bit of green space now and then, and trees and things like that nearby at your schools. And I thought, you know, if this property were contiguous with the campus, it would make a great place to provide, you know, an area for students to sit during breaks, during lunch breaks, things like that. But I don't really think that this site is appropriate for that. Again, I think there's better sites that are probably more appropriate on the San Luis campus should we need to expand. So that being said, I actually went to the district and I asked for data about recruitment and retention, because I think what we really should be considering here is if we believe that we have retention problems and recruitment problems, then absolutely we should be doing something about it. And this seems like a very appropriate way to do that, to generate a fund that would benefit, you know, new teachers. I think we could have potentially a lot of additional discussion about whether or not it really should be a district goal to create an environment where all teachers are in a position to be able to own a home. I think we have to realize that in this community in particular, that may be an unsustainable goal for us as a district. You know, there is affordable housing in the community. There's plenty of affordable rentals, and we expect that when the additional housing at Cal Poly comes online, that there will be even more rentals available downtown. So, you know, what I'm trying to say, I think, is that I favor moving forward, putting the entitlements on the property so that we're in a position to affect some change and help some teachers and staff and employees should we realize in the future that we actually have a retention problem. The data that I got from the district indicates that we probably don't have a recruitment problem, or we haven't had one in the past for our core positions. You know, for many of them, you know, math and science and history and English, we have 40, 50, 60, 70 teachers applying for those positions. So we have a large pool of teachers who want to come work in the district. If you look back at the history, for teachers who have been here more than 6 or about 30%, 30 or so, a third of them have turned over and left the district for one reason or another. Some of those have been terminated, some have resigned, but I think we can assume that perhaps some of them have left for affordability reasons. And with this large pool of teachers and employees that we know are going to retire, some third of our staff we expect will be retiring in the next 4, 5, 6 years. I think it would be prudent to be in a position, if we have a retention issue, to be able to move quickly and do something about it. And by placing the entitlements on the property now, I think that would be a prudent move. What I don't support necessarily is making a decision about how we use those funds today. I think we need to have a lot more discussion about that. But I would support moving forward on entitlement. I have one other question. If we do move forward and put entitlements on the property, how long do they last? I mean, is there a time limit on the entitlement, or is it in perpetuity once we make those changes?
The property would be entitled. Once entitled, it stays with the property.
It stays entitled. Okay. Good.
Sure. I'm Steve DelMartini. I'm not sure that it stays entitled forever. I can tell you that there are time limits that you have to pursue some sort of activity on the site. And that might run to a 2 or 3 year period. So I think that that should maybe, if you pass this further tonight, I think that maybe you might pass the subject to getting that answer directly from the city. We had Michael Conran was on the on the committee, and it is my understanding through the development that I've been involved with that, you know, a year goes by, there has to be something. There are ways to extend, but they also cost money to extend, but it doesn't just go forever, I don't think.
Okay. And then just a follow-up to that, if we did entitle the property, move forward to zone it and entitle it, for example, for single-family homes, and we decided later that we wanted to build some sort of workforce housing, you know, deed-restricted, managed by the district, we could do that. We could make that or apply to make that change at some point in the future. Is that correct?
It would involve either a general plan and specific plan, or at least a specific plan amendment. There would be a lengthy process to go through to change it from.
Comment?
Okay.
First, I want to say, Dave, that was very helpful information, and I appreciate you gathering it. Excellent staff work on part of Mr. Parker on this item. It made it a lot clearer for me. I've got a couple of currents running through me. One probably is related to getting ready to put my house on the market, and that is that we face an uncertain real estate environment in California. I'm old enough to have been through a couple of cycles. I'd hate for us to invest in some infrastructure, staff requirements for housing and things, and then have the dynamics of it all change by the time we bring it online. However, I kind of feel the way Dave feels. I would like us to move forward with the entitlement, and my sense for myself, and it's not a real hard view at this point, is that I'm more inclined toward generating the best revenue for a vacant property sale after the entitlements, have that money available, and then if the recruiting retention issue materializes, I kind of favor the direct financial assistance to home buyers. That gives us more control with how we set the criteria, who qualifies, who. I mean, it'd be nice if we can't recruit specific kind of teachers, and this is something we can use in the recruitment effort. So I favor maintaining our flexibility and picking our spots of where we want to address our recruiting and retention concerns. I don't want us to get into the real estate and housing management business. That part really concerns me, just because of the visibility issue for real property and economics in our community. I'm not predicting any really horrible thing, but it's just that, you know, I remember people walking away from their homes because their mortgages were far greater than their home values. Things change.
Well, for my part, I have a couple of different feelings. My first feeling is, and I've said this to a couple of people, you don't have to be born on a family farm to have a sort of a visceral reaction that says, I guess for me, I should own this, my visceral reaction says, don't sell the land. Don't ever sell the land. So I have to get past that one. And 5 years ago, we didn't have the money to spend to entitle this asset. I think it is possible that a future board may be in a position comparable to where we were 5 years ago and will not have the money to spend to entitle it. And so we have it now. It is very possible for us to go forward with it. And then if we don't need to sell it, or we elect not to sell it, it's not incumbent upon us to do so. We are just holding a piece of property that we have brought to its highest and best value, either for use by our board or a future board that finds that they really need it. I'm certainly in favor of looking at employer-assisted housing. I'm not saying that I'm not, and it may be that, you know, this board will decide to go forward with that. But all that we're being asked to do right now is to commit the money to make the necessary changes, the zoning changes and what have you, either do a negative declaration, do an EIR, whatever we might need to do to bring the property up to a value where we could move or a subsequent board could move quickly on it. So I'm in favor of going forward.
I'm not in favor of going forward. I feel like that the land is a public trust, and I don't understand the rush and pressure on this item. And we talk about the high school not needing it in the next 20 years, but I think that we in our Western civilization have such short views of things, and I sort of like the Native American idea of planning ahead six generations ahead on what's going to be good for students. And I don't think we can say six generations out that we're not going to need this land in our educational hub there with the district office and adult ed and the high school to use this for our students and for learning. And we can build, you know, beautiful architectural buildings on steep slopes that would have gorgeous views that could benefit students, independent study students, or students of all ages at that site. And once we sell the land, we've done something that is the end of owning that land for the district. It's a big end. That's it. So I'm in favor of the district retaining the property, which would mean not just North County and South County and driving, and because that's expensive too. And you know, you want to think of the whole picture here of people being happy working. So I'm in favor of keeping the property and not spending money. I want to say one last thing. We can pretend that we can start down a path and that we're not really on the path. But once you start down a path, we have to recognize that we are on a path, and it has momentum and investment in it, which does influence decisions and add pressure for outcomes.
Thank you. I have several things I wanted to discuss. And seeing that it's only 8 o'clock and our meetings usually go to 10:30, there's plenty of time. I wanted to mention initially the comments, I think, tonight are on point with the issues that we're facing. And I agree with everyone here that tonight we do have to make a decision about whether to go forward with the entitling process or not. And if we don't go forward with the entitling process, I think it's a decision the board's making not to develop or sell this property, and we're telling the community that we're going to leave it the way it is. So let's be clear about the decision tonight, that if we do make that decision, that's the direction we're going, because to expend $300,000 to $450,000 to entitle it and then not do anything with it is really a waste of money. So we have to really make sure we understand what we're doing tonight. David brought up a point about the housing becoming more affordable, and interestingly enough, and Mr. Del Martini, who's a respected member of the community, has been in real estate for years, may add to this, there are condominiums planned for downtown San Luis Obispo, and the majority of them are already spoken for, and the price, from what I understand, is $500,000 to $700,000 for condominiums downtown. Now, that may be off a bit, but the point that I've heard is that that's not affordable housing, and it won't be affordable housing. Rentals, too. And I think the thing about the rentals versus what we're trying to look at here is the idea that you will have employees who have a connection to the community and will be here for a long time. And that was the idea in terms of helping employees who come to the district in the future years to settle their roots into the community. Two things that I think are important in terms of our decision. I respect Adrian's point about the open land, and I do a lot of hiking up in the Sierras. Go on in perpetuity because the funds are established. You're talking about doing something for this district that may last for 50 years or 100 years because you're bringing people here and assisting them to stay, good people who will work with the children. So I don't believe once you sell it, it's over with. I think it turns into something else. And I think that's what we're looking at, is what else will this become? It's going to become a means to help retain or help support staff in the future, which we will have to address because it's going to become more difficult. So I think our initial response to this issue is to look at how it benefits the students, how it benefits the district, and I think that's our responsibility. The second thing is that I want to make sure, and I think we've discussed this before, this is meant to be a discussion point for all staff. I know that we've mentioned teachers several times, and I certainly recognize that there's a retention and hiring issue relative to teachers, but I don't want to forget the fact that we're looking at other people who work within our district who do perform important jobs and who are just important to what we do. So it's not, I don't think we're limiting it to any group yet, and I want to stress that this is something that we're looking at in terms of the entire district and everyone who comes to work here, because we want to support a coherent and a very supportive program. The entitlement cost, from what I understand, I had a question for Brad. In terms of paying for this, Brad, that can come out of the capital facilities fund?
Yes, it can.
And that's presently at $5,357,000 and some change.
I'll defer to Assistant Superintendent for Business.
And then there's also a building fund balance of about $363,000. Is that also available?
Yes.
Okay. So roughly, there's about $5,700,000 that's available if we want to use those funds to continue with the entitlement process. So that's something I think that we need to look at, in the sense that there may be these funds available to do this, and to do this will lead us to the point where we may be able to generate $3 to $5 million more dollars to assist in a long-term program. The final thing that I wanted to mention is that I think we have a responsibility to the students here now and who will be here in the future, that we continue to think into the future, 15, 20, 25 years from now, because it's not going to become any easier for employees to be able to become a member of this community. I think one of the worst things we could have is if we have teachers that come to school at 8 in the morning and have to drive 45 miles or 50 miles or 60 miles to get of the board providing the funding to entitle that property, and then decide at a later date how that will best be used. In addition, at a later date, things may change, but we will have the property available then to look at it. So the discussion doesn't end, but I think investing this money in the long run is going to provide huge returns financially to do things that we cannot do otherwise.
And I'm also in favor of moving forward on the entitlement. One of the things that struck me was the statement in the backup material that we had, that a fund of $5 million could assist 50 employees every 5 years buy a home and still provide ongoing revenue of about $200,000 a year for the district. You know, if we look several generations out, that's $20 million after about 100 years. And that's not chump change. There has been a question about whether we want to bring this forward for an action item this evening, or whether we would like to bring it forward another evening and take action on it. I see several people have their microphones down. I'm going to start with Mr. Millar and then go to Mr. Peter and then Mrs. Dickinson. And then I'd like the board to make a decision about whether we want to take action on this item this evening. Dr. Valentine, do you have feelings on that? Thank you.
I just wanted to get a little bit of clarification on according to the flow chart, we're at the tail end of stage two. Where do we have to know whether or not we want entitlement for 14R1 versus 38 to affordable or some other configuration like that? Are we there, or are we close to there?
We are very close to there. Okay. We're essentially stalled pending that answer, because the next steps will be to actually flesh out the project. Because in order to make application for a general plan amendment and a specific plan, you actually have to have a project that looks very well defined.
Oh, so we would, you say well defined, would we need to consult with the developer already, or potential developers?
Architects, land use planners.
Okay.
The city likes, in order to make this move and rezone the property, the city needs to see a well-defined project so they know what it is that they're approving.
And I gather from Mr. Del Martini's comments that once we decide what we want the entitlement to be for, there is a limited shelf life, in the sense that maybe we're not entitled as the years go by to assume that we're going to be able to rely on the EIR. Either, you know, selling the property, having the funds in the bank for us in one form or another, it provides us, we are doing something about recruiting and retention already. Every time I was out at the county office of ed event last weekend, and man, we are a lucky school district, and I understand that we are fortunate because of a lot of influences, but we're also fortunate because we made a lot of good decisions back when they were harder to make. And we have good labor relations. We have respectful negotiations with employee groups. We closed our negotiations really well. If we all think, if those of us who are around remember back the idea that budgeting for pay raises was like a flash of enlightenment. So we're doing a lot of things well to address this. And it may turn out, as Dave says, that the, you know, the beast we're expecting to show up at the front door doesn't show up, or it shows up in another form. And I like the flexibility of the money in the bank and enabling us to respond to whatever that situation turns out to be.
Well, I think in part Walt addressed the issue. I just wanted to make sure we were really clear on how long those entitlements sit with the property. Yeah, that was the only additional point.
The benefits that you're mentioning, John, I agree with, but do we have to sell the property to provide housing for teachers and staff on the property? We don't really have to sell it to do that, right? Aren't there some options listed here that where we would retain the property, but we would sell the houses on the property or the apartments or condominiums and share equity? Yeah, there's several here, it seems to me, where we retain the property, but we can still build housing for staff right there instead of selling it to 14 rich families and then using money to give our teachers what may or may not be enough to, for them to actually buy anything, which might be very far away, like 50 miles. So I think we can work on providing housing for staff right there without selling the property. Isn't that true?
Yeah, no, I wasn't saying to pursue one option or another.
Okay.
I was just saying I was supporting that we should go forward with the entitlement.
So if we build anything, we have to go forward with the entitlement,
well,
even if we don't sell.
The two things that interest me the most are the multiple units that provide lower-priced housing. That's one. And the other part would be selling it for the largest amount of money. I don't think we have to make that decision tonight, but I was only talking toward the fact that using that property for the best uses of this of the district would be to allow the entitlement process to go forward. That's all.
Yeah, I think what we're hearing tonight is that the decision to go forward with the entitlement would have to carry with it some direction.
That requires board action this evening, or is this something that the board can direct the staff to do, which is to come back with the details of the entitlement so that we can make a decision about which potential use of the land we would like to see go forward to the Planning Commission and to the city? Is that what you're saying? So which one of those is it?
Yes, I'm hearing you say that you need more information regarding the duration of the entitlement to make a decision on whether or not to go forward with the entitlement. And then secondly, we would be coming to the board with that information and then with a subsequent question, which would be if you wish to direct staff to proceed with the entitlement, we would ask also for entitlement for what type of project at that point.
Well, I was gonna just add something that may focus us a little bit more. If you took three options that exist at this point in time that we know about that Brad had discussed and presented in his material, one, develop the property for deed restricted housing; two, create affordable housing by design housing, which would both deal with 38 housing units; and then the third would be 14 R1 single family lots that would provide the larger amount of money. What entitlement process needs to be attached to those three options? Is it similar? Would you go through that same entitlement process and then have those three options available at the end of that entitlement process? I mean, we don't have to make the specific decision tonight, but we could do the utmost for the entitlement avenue and then have multiple options at the end of that.
And we'd like to have an opportunity to discuss this in greater detail regarding what these options would look like. And if you the board wants us to move forward and in fact want to do something with the property, we would welcome the opportunity to come back and really get into the details of what these options would look like. In order to get the property rezoned from public facility, we have to have a plan for it. We bring that plan through. There's a general plan amendment and a specific plan based upon that plan, which actually has, you know, color pictures of the buildings, and it actually is a defined project. Once the property is rezoned, it's also entitled to, for a developer, if we sold the property, to move forward and build that project. After a certain shelf life, that boards an ultimate goal.
Adrian, I'm going to ask Mr. Bedrigian to come up. He had signaled that he'd like to, and then we'll go to you.
Thank you. Bruce Bedrigian, president of the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Just two points that I'd like to bring up. One, I'd like to start with a question on teacher retention. And I'll defer to central administration. Maybe you can help me on this. What do we offer teachers coming from another district? How many years do we accept and pay them at that level? Is it?
It's 10 years worth of transferable experience.
Okay. You were having the discussion about, are we getting enough applicants? When I was department head of the English department, I was doing those interviews, and as Mr. Peter said, sometimes we get 50, sometimes we get 75 applicants for one position. True. Are we getting the best applicants? That's debatable. Is San Luis Coastal getting the best applicants right now? That's debatable. One might say that Santa Maria is getting the best applicants. And one of the reasons for that is they're paying the most money right now. However, and this is just something for you to think about, if we lifted that restriction and we were willing to go ahead and say, you know what, we really do want the best teachers in the state, in the country, then we would lift that and we would say, if you have 20 years, come apply. Because if you are really that good, if you are great, that'll show. And we check their references, and we look at things, and we interview them, and we offer them. You would be surprised at the teachers that would come to this district from all over the country. But right now, no. Unlike other professions in the business world, where if you move to another place, usually you're moving up. With teachers, they're moving down if they move from another district. So that's just something to consider as far as teacher retention goes. The second point I was thinking when I was listening, and on this point I'm not speaking as president of the association. I'm just speaking as a teacher and as a parent of this district. The second item I was thinking, opponent of creating think tanks that are maybe even a little bit larger than our own myopic view here within the San Luis Coastal. So I thought that was a provocative idea. And finally, the last thing I wanted to say was I am so impressed with what I'm hearing as far as the conscientious attitude, the forward thinking that I hear from this board. Whatever decision you make, I just want to applaud you for taking the time, the consideration, for thinking about the employees in this district and the students in this district. So I'm very impressed with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bedrigian. Mrs. Dickinson?
Clarify something. Dr. Valentine, it seems like you're saying if we decide to vote for entitlement, I'm not voting tonight, but we're really moving toward one of those designs where we have the 14 units or the whatever units. We're selling at market value, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's that.
No, I'm just clarifying that.
Hey, I'll call Brad to the stand. My understanding is that we would have to distinguish between R1 or multiple family.
We will, but we certainly don't have to tonight. In fact, I didn't expect you to make that decision tonight. We would like to have a discussion focused on that. We wanted to know, are we even on the right roadmap here, and is are we headed towards the right direction? And now we can have some serious discussions, and we'll come back to talk about affordable by design housing, 38 units, the plot plans. We'll bring our consultant to discuss the entitlement process and answer any specific questions you'd have, and hopefully then you would be comfortable making a decision as to what you ultimately you would like to see this project look like, with the idea that it may well become a sold piece of property.
I just wanted to, Adrian, your last comment, it may have more to do with the context of, you know, we part of the direction we gave was figure out the best, highest value and usage. So to some extent, what we want the project to look like on there and thereby guide the entitlement process has to do with what we think will make it the most attractive piece of property that we could get the highest value for if the decision was to sell it.
John.
At its highest and best value, and there are several different options at that point further down the road. So tonight, I believe that the board is asked to say, yes, please go ahead, and we are willing to put those funds to entitle this property, and later we will have another discussion about what options there are with the property once the entitlements are in place at a point in time when you bring it back saying, now you have to decide this. That may be in 6 months, it may be in 8 months, it may be in 3 months, it may be in 2 months. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we might come back in 2 weeks. We're ready to. If the board's ready, if you need additional information, and you know, we'd love to hear about it. We provided you a lot of backup materials. We want you to feel comfortable in what direction you tell us to proceed with the project ultimately. And you have a choice.
And you know what? I'm going to let Marilyn go. She's had her mic down for quite a while. I just wanted to point out also, though, that this will all be in public, an open session.
Hi, Brad. Sorry. If we went forward with the proposal to create zoning for 14 lots, would we be required to provide renderings and what have you that might show what the homes are like on those lots, or is it just simply 14 individual lots from that parcel?
That's just 14 individual lots. If those lots were sold, then the owner of those lots, whenever they went to develop it, they would have to go to the Architectural Review Committee and get the renderings. And there will be height restrictions and city zoning requirements as to what they could put on those lots, but we wouldn't have to show the renderings of individual lots.
So if we were to go forward, for example, with that scenario, those lots, once they became bona fide lots, would remain lots in perpetuity. That's not the entitlement as a lot doesn't change, right?
The zoning would be changed permanently. I believe the lots essentially would be defined and there unless someone wanted to do a lot line adjustment in the future. And the because those lots are really not entitled with anything specific other than they know that there are one lot. And so there'll be a process then that the future owner of that greater San Luis High School property has already been identified in the city's general housing element for potential rezoning for residential, and this parcel is a piece of that.
So we have a receptive audience at this time.
Yeah, and when we've met with the city planning department, community development, they've been very receptive to it, and that's why staff is very confident that we would be successful in the rezoning and entitlement process.
Okay. Thanks, Brad.
Well, just following up on John's comments, I think we need to clarify what we want to accomplish here tonight in terms of a vote if we come to one, and that I think we could probably get consensus around a vote to move forward with entitlements, but I think that immediately tees up follow-up discussion about what we want to do, perhaps in 2 weeks, and whether it's one of the options that's listed in the packet related to affordable housing or perhaps something completely different that might be brought forward. But I think if we try to vote and say, let's entitle it as R1 denied or let's entitle it as deed-restricted housing, I think that's where I'm not comfortable making that decision tonight.
I got a call from Christine Mulholland, and she thought that affordable housing is not really existing in our town right now, and the only way to get affordable housing is a joint venture with something like Housing Authority, and that selling the property is not going to in any way, shape, or form help affordable housing. And that's coming from someone on City Council. So City is very interested in affordable housing, and her idea is that selling the property would preclude affordable housing on that site. I still don't understand the rush. I'm hearing Mr. Bedrigian and Mr. Buckman saying, this is a great thing to think about, but why are we deciding now that in 2 weeks that we're going to move ahead and spend $500,000 or whatever, and in 2 weeks we're going to be deciding whether it's 14 or 38 units? And, I don't think that we need to do that right now. But I do think that thinking about how to accomplish, deed-restricted housing or a joint venture is worth talking about, but that doesn't even require entitlement, is what I'm understanding.
All right. Oh, sorry, Mrs. Roger.
Just as a follow-up to that, Adrian, I think I don't want to lose sight of the option to have the money in hand to use for loans.
This discussion has been going on actually for a couple of years now. I can't remember when we first started discussing it, but I believe it's been at least 2 years. And we've had ongoing discussions over this, at least over the past year in public sessions. So, I don't know, Dr. Valentine?
The staff recommendation tonight is for the board to provide direction. It really doesn't call for a specific action and certainly not for a specific designation of a project. The consensus that we're hearing as staff is, yes, we want to move forward with information on the entitlement process, come back to us, take a look at options, and share that with the board. Probably don't need a vote to at least proceed to that level. Eventually it would come to a vote, and the board would have to decide just how they wanted to do that.
Right. My thinking is that when we actually expend the $400,000 or whatever we decide, that that's when we'll have to have the vote on this. I'm thinking that this is something that I would like to have brought back to the board with the board's consensus on a night that we don't have a lot of other stuff on the agenda, because I think that there's a lot more discussion that's going to take place. My experience is that when we talk about this issue, and what I'm hearing is we're going to have a lot of presentations, we're going to have a lot of options presented to us, and possibly a lot of public comment. So I would ask that when we bring this back, we bring it back at a time that we don't have a heavy board agenda. John,
go ahead.
Dr. Valentine, and then John.
As we look at the next board meeting, which is October the 3rd, I believe, I think we could design the agenda in that way if that date is convenient with the board.
I just wanted to have some clarification as to what staff is taking away from tonight's meeting.
I'll call Brad up to the podium too.
And I'm whatever Dr. Valentine says, I'm good with.
That aside, what I'm hearing is that essentially the board has interest in moving forward with the entitlement process. The board is not sure at this point which direction to go with that entitlement process.
If you consolidated and focused everything, if we move or direct staff to move forward regarding this entitlement process to the point where specific projects can be discussed and all related issues, then we have moved forward. But the idea is that we move forward toward the goal that what has to be accomplished is accomplished to discuss specific projects that can be utilized with that property. Yes. Is that?
And that's what we would be asking the board to make a decision on in its next discussion or subsequent discussion is specifically now, what do you want this project to look like? We are at the point where we can't go any further until we have that clarification.
So until we tell you what we want it to look like, anything else that we might say to you with regard to going forward with entitlements is like tying your shoelaces together and telling you to move ahead.
Right. There's nothing more for us to do until we know the direction of what this project's going to look like.
Okay.
We've done everything up to that point.
Is this all agreeable to the board that we're hearing that the staff will bring this information back to us for an idea about whether and what the actual outcome of the entitlement will look like based on two or three possible developments for this land? Is that everybody?
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that.
I think that's what he just said, is what I'm saying.
Okay, what do you think it was he just said?
I think what I just heard was we're asking the board to do something they just did for this meeting. We're asking so we can look at all this again and be right where we were. That we're at the point where we have to sort of choose some of these, is what you're saying. We can't put it off again. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, the board can certainly put it off. We wanted to know tonight. We heard last time a lot of questions about even moving forward with anything with the Johnson Avenue property. So we wanted to have a more complete discussion, answer a number of questions, and get the feeling from the board that, yes, we do want to move forward with Johnson.
Units it would be. This, and we have actually done that piece of it to the extent that we can estimate it, given the stage that we're in right now. We want to revisit that information with you. You guys would then have the opportunity to digest or ask more questions or bring back more information later. But it is the preliminary information we would revisit with you in the next meeting. And then from that, we would expect that you either have more questions or you have enough to give us the specific direction that we're asking for, which would be this is the option A that we're choosing.
I think after our last meeting, we all sort of scattered in different directions with regard to Johnson, and it left staff wondering, what does the board feel? Had our previous discussions gone by the wayside? I wonder if we're just comfortable tonight telling Brad and the others that the board is interested in going forward with entitlement, at least so that they know that we're of one mind on that, that they can go back to the drawing board, but that is sort of the board direction. Would you feel more comfortable, Brad, or would you feel more comfortable if you knew that, yes, the board was, in whatever form it might take, interested in going forward?
I always feel more comfortable knowing that I'm doing what the board would like staff to do.
And we like it that you like that.
And Dr. Valentine, and then I think I'm going to try to close off this discussion.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of broad variables that the board may want to discuss in connection with the questions on Johnson Avenue property, and there may be some quite narrow questions that may help the board also come to terms with the options on this property, and they relate to the objectives for the proceeds. And if the objective, for instance, is regardless of whether we go to a concept of employer-assisted housing, or whether we look at establishing a revenue stream that could be used for academic program, for facilities, whatever kinds of things. Those may be questions also the board wants to address, and you may want to say, I want the best balance between those kinds of considerations and the amount of money that we generate. And there will be options that I think will clarify those things for you, too. So what we'll try to do, and the challenge that I see us struggling with, is to try to simplify the questions as much as possible so that there is an answer that could conceivably come forward.
And I, just to close, I think five of the board members support moving forward on the entitlement process, and I know Mrs. Dickinson has other feelings about that. So I think that the staff has a direction now.
Great.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the action consent agenda, please. If anybody would like to pull one, please let me know. Item number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 10, approval of technical correction to retroactive salary adjustment to Assistant Superintendent Educational Services. Item number 11, acceptance of donations. Item number 12, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item number 13, approval of purchase orders. And item number 14, approval of out-of-state field study trip request, Morro Bay High School Future Farmers of America students to attend National FFA Convention in Indianapolis.
Can I pull 9 at this point?
Yes,
thanks.
Of course. Okay, do we have a motion for items 10 through 14?
I'll move approval of items 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14.
Mr. Peter, it's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Peter to approve items 10 through 14. Any discussion on those from the public? None. All in favor?
Aye.
It carries 6-0. Mrs. Dickinson, item number 9.
I have a quick question for Mr. Robinette about temporary contracts. Teachers keep taking classes. I took 2 classes this summer, planning to take 2 this quarter. It was never-ending education. But I ran across a student in a class at Cal Poly this summer who was applying for jobs, and she said that there was somebody in our district who had a temporary contract for like 19 years or 17 or something. And I'm just thinking that...
teacher on temporary contract who's been there their entire school career here. So soft funding is one reason why someone remains on a temporary contract. The other reason is because of teachers who are on leaves of absence or in job shares who have rights to full-time permanent positions but are maybe only working half-time. We have to hold a certain number of temporary assignments against those so that we don't force ourselves into layoff. And with the declining enrollment district where we're losing 200 to 300 students a year, not quite keeping up with our retirements or hopefully stabilizing, it means we keep teachers in temporary status longer than I wish we had to. But those are the two essential reasons for it.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve item number 9.
Motion by Mrs. Dickinson, second by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 6-0. Move on to item number 16, advanced agenda. Does anybody have anything to talk about for advanced agenda at this time? Mr.
Spadafore? I would like to propose to the board that we put a date certain regarding the planning and funding for music, PE, and visual arts sometime early next year, to follow up on the study session that we had several months ago, that be specifically dated.
Is there support from Mrs. Dickinson for a date on that? And everybody else?
Sure.
Okay. Dr. Valentine, if you could do that perhaps by the next meeting and give us a date for the study session on music and art PE. Okay. Anything else?
I just wanted to add, if I may, with Dr. Valentine planning that, I think it also would be helpful to have some type of a schedule or timeline regarding the additional funding that may be coming in this year with the trailer bills and the legislation that's just been passed, so we know when that'll be available. And then I know we're going to talk about strategic planning. And one of the things that I was hoping that we could look at as a group and as a district is the utilization of one-time funds for longer-term programs, even though there are those limitations.
If we talk about it in January, that's not too late. It doesn't sound like.
Part of the problem with the state is they've passed this program, but they haven't allocated the money yet. And almost certainly we will be getting it. The question is, how is it going to come to us as the political evaluation of the political instrument, the bill, is completed? There will be some analysis done, and then we'll know more. That hasn't finished yet.
Well, I'm just thinking second semester. It would be nice to have it before January, just in case we want to start something up second semester in schools. Maybe December? I don't know.
As the information about the bill comes to us, we will bring that to you in the format of what we currently do and what we could do with it. We currently do some hirings of its one-time money. We have a year-over-year basis on that. And this is ongoing money, so maybe that's what John was talking about in terms of turning one-time program into ongoing program with this money. As that becomes clear to us from the analysis that certainly will occur, we can start talking about that.
I would think that maybe January, February might be better for another reason, too. I'm not very clear, and I don't know how the rest of the board is on this, but the concept of integrating new programs back into the core day that K through 6 have, secondary issues of prep time for teachers in K through 6, and how we may restructure our day there to allow additional programs to be brought into our system. So that's a whole different discussion, which I would hope that we could have at the same time that we start discussing the use of the money, short-term, long-term programs. How does it impact the teachers in the classroom? How is it going to affect prep time? How is it going to affect new personnel to implement this? So I think if we could bring that all together.
Okay.
So then are we landed on December?
Item number 17, reports by board members and district administrators. Any reports by board members?
I have one.
Mr. Millar.
Your house is for sale?
Thank you, John, but no, that's not it. I wanted to, first of all, I was the board representative at the County Office of Education's forum for candidates for school board, Cuesta, and Slo County School Board as well. Barry was doing parts of the interview in Spanish. It was just the neatest thing to see. And I have never been so proud of Pacheco and our staff and our kids at Pacheco to hear that Mr. Mayfield's son just sort of speak so intelligently in English about his school and his program and his dad, and then to be interviewed in Spanish and just have this wonderful sense of the language and expression. It was really great, and I just wanted to point that out. Channel surf whenever you can, Channel 2. Thank you.
Okay, let's see. I guess I just had a little bitty one.
Sure.
Just had a little report. I went to back to school night at Morro Bay High School, mostly for personal reasons. I don't typically go to back to school nights as a board member because they're not like open house. It's really structured for parents to learn from the teachers what their expectations are for the students and what the classes will all be about. And I had the opportunity to sit in Mr. Bedrigian's class, as it turns out, because my son is one of his students this year. So it was an interesting night, it was a fun night for me. Mr. Zodovich did mention, and I will seize the opportunity to repeat it, that Morro Bay High School is the highest scoring high school in the county on the API, and I'm very proud of that. Thanks.
I wish I could go to all the back-to-school nights. They're really fun. I did make it to Monarch Groves, which I enjoyed, and Morro Bay High School. And who's the king out there? His first name's King, who teaches history, and his Schofield. That's what I was going to say. I should have just said that. I got to go talk to him because he doesn't have a first period, so I just got to chat with him one-on-one. What an impressive teacher. Do you take a class from him?
I took Honors World History, 10th grade. It was an amazing class.
I'm sure it was, and I was inspired just speaking with him for a while. So it was great to get out there and be on campus.
Yoni.
I was just going to say really quick about Mr. Schofield, because you brought him up. He has been instrumental in helping us start the new debate club that we started.
The entire board meeting. Thanks for being here.
And thanks for your contribution on the steroid discussion, too. So,
thank you, guys.
Would somebody like to move to adjourn? Mrs. Dickinson. And second by?
I'll second.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.